One of the things that we find in our society today is that it is an amalgamation of a lot of different cultures and a lot of different religions. Whether it is because of our lifestyle or simply because of the world that we live in really makes absolutely no difference as to how we are supposed to do things. We, as Christians, oftentimes tend to live far too close to the world, and thus the habits and the language of Ashdod reflect in our speech and ways. The passage that Tom read for you this morning in Nehemiah chapter 13. The Jews had lived so far from God for so long and been disobedient to Him for so long that they had forgotten how to speak in a godly fashion. Far too often, our lives reflect the world more than they reflect God. Are slang words or euphemisms wrong? Some will say yes, some will say no. We need to understand that slang words, euphemisms, are words that are used in place of what is generally recognized as a bad word or as an unkind word. We find them in frequent use throughout society in general. And we even find them in use by Christians. When we look at them, we find that this corrupt speech falls into three separate categories. One of those categories, of course, is the obscene, the sexually related corrupt speech. That which deals with things that ought not be discussed, period. We find that it talks about the profane speech, the religiously related corrupt speech. And we find that it is vulgar many times. The idea, of course, being the elimination related corrupt speech, that which tries to eliminate someone else or something else. When we look in Ephesians, in chapter 4 at verse 29, we find that Paul tells us that the Christian speech is to be for edifying and for building each other up. He says, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear it." In other words, the Christian speech is to serve as a blessing to those who hear it, not as a curse. In this particular passage, we find there the idea that we need to understand the standard for our very speech patterns. We find that there are also three ways in which people use profane speech. We find them uttering a curse of some sort. In Matthew chapter 5 at verse 22, Jesus says, But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. To curse another person, or even to curse God's creation, is a sin against God. We have absolutely no right to pronounce curses on God's creation. After all, each one of us is part of that creation. If anyone has the right to pronounce a curse upon someone else, it would be God and not one of His creation. God made the earth, and God made the people as a blessing. God did it out of the kindness, the generosity, the love that is in His heart. And for us to treat His creation in any less fashion would be a disgrace to Him and would be a sin. We find people using God's name in vain. In Exodus chapter 20 at verse 7, in the Ten Commandments, one of those says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. It continues, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. I realize that I just quoted out of the Ten Commandments, and many people will tell me, well, the Ten Commandments were nailed to the cross with the rest of the law of Moses. And I wouldn't argue that point with you one bit. In fact, I would agree with you. But what we must understand about this is that the principles that were laid down in the Ten Commandments, we find laid down in the New Testament. I can walk through the New Testament and I can show you the principle behind every one of them, with the exception of keeping the Sabbath. So even though we go back to the Ten Commandments and quote that to say that we should not use God's word in vain, the principle behind it is still true today. God does not want us to refer to Him in a vain or an empty way. After all, He is God. He deserves our constant and complete respect. To use His name in an empty way is to not give God the respect that He deserves. We also find another way that people use profane speech is in utilizing something God made holy and making it common. When you turn back into the Old Testament once again and you turn back to Ezekiel and you look in Ezekiel chapter 7. In fact, let me go over there with you rather than what I have written down here, because I want to change that just a little bit. In Ezekiel chapter 7, when we start at verse 20, he says, they transformed the beauty of his ornaments into pride, and they made the images of their abominations and their detestable things with it. Therefore, I will make it an abhorrent thing to them. I will give it into the hands of the foreigners as plunder, and to the wicked of the earth as spoil, and they will profane it. I will also turn my face from the river Chebar. I will also turn my face from them, and they will profane my secret place. Then robbers will enter and profane it. And he keeps talking about this idea of the things that he has made holy being profaned by those around, not just the outside world, but those who should know better. The sexual relationship that God has determined for us is one example of how things that God made holy might be profaned. Today, we see people living in the same household without benefit of marriage. We see all sorts of things going on in that realm. And yet God made the relationship to be set apart, to be holy, between husband and wife. In Hebrews chapter 13 at verse 4, he says, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. If we speak of that relationship as if it was just another common or casual activity, we denigrate what God proclaimed as holy, what God placed in a very sanctified situation. Far too many people in today's society, and far too many Christians, I fear, among them, speak of it in a flippant and joking way. In Ephesians chapter 5, at verses 3 and 4, Paul writes and says, immorality or any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving thanks. Paul says this is not the way that Christians are supposed to speak, that they are supposed to keep the things that God placed in a holy situation in that situation, that they are not supposed to look at it as something light and flippant. So, if these are the cases, the things that we have just talked about, where do euphemisms fit in? Where might we find them used? What are some of them? I didn't list them on the chart, and I really should have, but I didn't. So, what are some of them that we hear? We hear things like the word fib, or stretching the truth. Do you understand that when someone uses that term, what they are speaking of is they're speaking of someone telling a lie? We hear the word affair, or we hear the word fleeing. Do you understand that those words are simply words to replace adultery? We hear the idea of living together, or we're in a relationship. Do you understand that means fornication? Pure and simple. Back when I was a kid growing up, I know, that's been a long, long time ago. I always tell people it was back when dirt was still new. Back when I was growing up, the word gay meant someone was happy. Do you understand that word today means that someone is homosexual? Let me tell you the latest I heard. Do you understand? That's talking about gossip. They're sure acting in a risque way. Do you understand? That means that they are acting in an immodest way. Risque is just another way of saying immodest. We can go on and on and on. An off-color joke simply means some dirty joke or some cussing involved in it. You saw your neighbor come home Saturday night and he'd had a little too much. I.e., he was drunk. You know what euphemisms are. You know what they mean, and you know what the speaker intended to say with them. A euphemism is using a word that doesn't sound as bad as the one that most consider offensive. But the meaning of the word is exactly the same. So there's no change in meaning when we use a euphemism. Now, I have been bald since I was in my 20s. So I have a lot of good comebacks for somebody who wants to talk about bald people, okay? But some people get really worried about the fact that they're losing their hair. I mean, they're extremely sensitive about it. So if you walked up to someone that was that way and you said something about them losing their hair, it would be insulting to them. Well, how about I go up to them and I say, you know, you possess fewer follicle appendages on the cutaneous apex of your cranial structure anterior to the sagittal suture and posterior to the lambdoidal suture where said follicle appendages habitually germinate. What did I just say? I said, man, you're getting bald. But it didn't sound quite as bad, did it? That's just simply a way of saying the same thing in a less offensive manner. So, let me ask you a question. What do many of the euphemisms commonly used today mean? When we look at the way people talk, we find them using words like golly. We find them using words like darn. We find them using words like heck. My first wife's brother's favorite expression was by Ned. I'll tell you why in a minute. What do these words mean? Are they okay to use? Are they just expressions of exasperation? What do they mean? Well, let's look at them. According to Webster's Dictionary, someone says gosh or golly. They're simply replacing the word God. It doesn't sound as bad. Someone uses the word geez. Or G. Yes, I know, G's used to turn horses. It's a whole different term. Someone says that. Oh, gee whiz. It's simply a replacement word. Instead of saying Jesus, they clean it up a little bit. They're using the Lord's name in vain. Is basically what they're doing. They're just cleaning it up a little bit. Cripes, or criminy, I know you don't hear those much anymore. But there are other words I could have put in there too. In place of Christ, we use heck. In place of the word hell. Dang, darn, in place of the word damn. When you look at these, we find that there are many, many more, but these all replace some word that people would be offended if we actually said it. So we replace it with something else. These are just the ones for profane speech. We haven't even mentioned the ones for vulgar and obscene speech, and I don't intend to this morning. We understand that no one says, "What in Allah's name is going on?" I know, smile. We never see someone text OMB for "Oh my Buddha." You intended for the person who saw this or heard it, you intended for them to interpret it as God. It is that simple. So what are, or what is, the standard for Christian speech? First of all, we need to understand that the standards that God sets for His people's speech is a lot different than the speech that we find in the world. In Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9, God says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." The world thinks very lightly of profane speech, calling it free speech. You know, in this country, the First Amendment allows me to say whatever I want to say, however I want to say it, whenever I want to say it, and wherever I want to say it, regardless of what anybody else might think. Don't you believe a word of what I just said. Because that's not what the First Amendment says. Although, that's what 99.9% of the people out in the world seem to think that that's what is said by the First Amendment of the Constitution. Yet, Jesus teaches us to take all speech seriously. If you'll turn over to Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 and 37. Look at this closely. Because Jesus says, "I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." Jesus says, what you say and how you say it is important. He said it's not okay to say anything and everything. He says take time to think about what you're going to say. Years ago, there was a movement about, and you can still find it every now and then. You saw people wearing necklaces. You saw them wearing plastic wristbands and all of this that had WWJD on it. You remember the what would Jesus do? Here's the funny thing about that. There was an emergency room nurse in Tennessee. Emergency room nurse. She said on Saturday nights, people would come in there, gunshot wounds, knife stabbings, alcohol-induced comas. Many of these people that were coming in there in that fashion had on bracelets with WWJD on them. Now, we as His children need to stop and ask ourselves before we open our mouths to say something, would Jesus have said that? Would He be pleased if I say it? We need to take what we say very, very seriously. No, I didn't say that it's wrong to tell a joke. I didn't say it's wrong to laugh. We should laugh. We should be happy. Certain jokes are perfectly fine. Others are not. So we need to take our speech seriously. It is important because it reveals the heart of man. Back up two verses from where we just were. Matthew chapter 12, verse 34 and 35. Jesus, in talking to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, the rulers of the Jew of that day, says, "You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil." He says in another place, it's not what goes in, it's what comes out that's the problem. When we look at these things, we understand what's going on. We know that there is no such thing as a Freudian slip. The people intended to say whatever it was that they said. Words manifest Christian conduct. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 8 through 10, "But now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him." Can't be Christians and continue to use abusive speech. It just simply cannot be done. So what standard do you have in speech? Do you cringe when you hear filthy language on television? Do you look at a movie and say, "Oh, it wasn't too bad. They didn't say too many bad words in it. And there was only one sex scene. It really wasn't all that bad." What is the standard that you use to judge speech by? Would you be embarrassed to use the words that you use in front of your grandmother or your mother? I told you, a brother-in-law that I once had, his favorite expression was "by Ned." He wouldn't have dared walk into his mother's house and use the other term. She'd have knocked him back out the door. So he changed God to Ned. Same thing. Would you be embarrassed to use the language that you use out in the world if your mother or your grandmother was standing right beside you? How do you speak after you leave this building? What kind of language do you use during the week? God despises a perverse mouth. When you turn into Proverbs, and you look in Proverbs chapter 4 at verse 24, he says, "Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put devious speech far from you." Don't use deceptive speech. Say what you mean and mean what you say. In Proverbs chapter 8 at verse 13, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance, and the evil way, and the perverted mouth I hate." Proverbs chapter 15 at verse 28. "The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things." I probably could have found more than those three, but I put those three down for a reason. You look at them and you understand that over and over and over again, God condemns flippant, profane, immoral speech. You know, somebody, once upon a time, we were talking about a discussion, and I brought up a passage, and they said, "Well, that's only one passage out of the whole Bible. How many times does God have to say it for it to be true?" There's at least three times. How many times do you have to say it for it to be true? We look at these things and we understand that Christians are supposed to control their speech. James says in James chapter 1 at verse 26, "If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless." The old King James, I think it says, in vain. This man's religion is worthless if he doesn't learn how to bridle his tongue. You know, we always make a joke about the way people talk. Somebody says something that doesn't come out just right. You know, 1, open mouth. 2, insert foot. 3, turn to the left. 4, chew. How about we change that? Engage your brain before you engage your mouth. Think about what you're saying and what would the Lord think of what you're just about to say. So, somebody surprised you. Somebody made you mad. So you exercised your American right to free speech. You edified no one. Reduced your influence. Hurt your listeners. Put souls at risk, including your own. Feel better now? Folks, we must, if we expect to be pleasing to God, be aware of the things God expects of us and the things that displease him. Each one of us is aware of euphemisms in the world. We live with people who use them every day. The question is, are we dishonoring God by being guilty of profaning his name and using other words to replace his name? Is it okay to use euphemisms? Certain ones, there's not a thing in the world wrong with them. But we showed you many of them today that are wrong. But society accepts them as being okay. The question is, what do you say and what are you going to do? I could spend a lot of time up here talking about more euphemisms, but I'm not going to. I do want you to consider that God expects us to speak plainly, but he also expects us to speak with salt and grace. If you're not doing so, you need to change the way you talk. If you've never obeyed the gospel, you need to change the way you talk and you need to obey the gospel. But before you think about obeying the gospel, be sure that you are committed to doing what God would have you to do. It's not hard, obeying the gospel. You see the steps up on the chart, and hopefully it won't go away on us this morning like it did the other day. It's not hard to get all the way down to baptism. The hard part comes in the faithfulness after that. We walk far too close to the world sometimes, and that causes our faithfulness to be in jeopardy. But if you are willing to commit your life to God, you can become a child of God this morning. Simply repent of the sins that are in your life. Make a determination that I'm not going to do this again. I'm going to please God. Confess his name before men and be buried in baptism. That's all you have to do. If you did that sometime in the past and yet you have been guilty of doing what we are talking about this morning, maybe you hadn't thought about it. Maybe you hadn't given it any thought at all. You need to repent of that and ask God for forgiveness. Maybe you're walking too close to the world. It's a struggle every day to stay where you need to be. And you need the prayers of the saints. Whatever it is, if you're subject to the invitation this morning and we can be of assistance, won't you let us know as we stand and we sing the song that has been selected?